General Government, Raising Maine. Let me first briefly go over what we're going to do today. Our intention is to pass out the legislative agencies, Senate Bill 5523, and we'll have to wait until we get enough votes. So if you see us change direction real quick, it's because we have enough people in the room, and we'll vote that out, and then go back to public hearing. The other bills, we will not be hearing the emergency fund today. We will be inviting testimony for the capital construction and the bond bill, but we will not be moving those out. We will meet at 2:30 tomorrow prior to the full Ways and Means to the work session on that. Leadership is still discussing those bills, and I prefer to wait until the chair returns to pass those bills out. So with that, I would like to open the work session for Senate Bill 5527, Capital Construction. Ms. Bailey, would you like to give us an update?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we talked and heard testimony about this bill a couple of days ago, and Chair Butler had raised some questions about the Department of Administrative Services portion of the Capital Construction Bill. The department has prepared some information for the subcommittee, and I have distributed that to you. And there are three pieces of paper, a letter, a packet of information, and a map. Also, during public hearing the other day, Senator Tim was in this subcommittee and asked for some information about the background on the Justice Building. Behind the current information that's dated today, there are two memos that I pulled from the legislative fiscal office's file that talks a bit about the Justice Building. And within that letter, it indicates what the rental rate is on the Robertson Building, which is where the Department of Justice and Judicial Department are currently leasing space. With that, Mr. Chair, I believe the Department of Administrative Services is available to provide some explanation of the documents that they have asked me to distribute to you.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Dave White, the Administrator of the Facilities Division. And I'm essentially here to answer to your pleasure, whatever it might be. I apologize. Our initial presentation to you was more abbreviated, I think, than Chair Butler had wanted, and that was just miscommunication on our part. We had thought you wanted it very compact, and we overdid that. So I have today detail at probably whatever level you'd like to go to on each project. Chair Butler also asked for a response to the letter from the Oregon Commercial Property Owners Association, and I think that's the first thing in your packet. We've also included a map. So we have before you the response to that, a map of the mall for those who are not really familiar with it, and presentation on the entire budget in detail. I'd be happy to start wherever you'd like.
Just go ahead, whatever you have
okay.
To
say. Mr. Chair, first, because I think it does kind of cover a number of issues, then would be the response to the letter. Just touching a couple of areas, we do have, it is a fact that we are spending on construction here in the state, and it does make sense that does interfere with leaseholders or owners who would like us to lease from them. We do lease very largely from landlords across the state. In fact, we lease out of the city of Salem, we lease far more than we own. Within the city, we are tilted, of course, because of the mall, more in favor of ownership. There is the issue that they recommended that we take cash for construction, and we would suggest that is not a wise move for the state. Cash would come out of the general fund. We'd have to find some way to put it back. The uniform rent system that we use brings in federal funds, other funds, and we use all of that money to apply to financing and construction. And it's a good way to spread the burden. They are right, however, that the project approval process has been very fragmented for decades. It has been a matter of many times of a ways and means approving a dollar. And so a number of dollar approvals then are made, but nothing is actually decided. We go to the emergency board and there discuss the entire project and ultimately build it with perhaps the legislature never really seeing it again. The new four-year plan that has just gone into place, and I'll be the first one to say that we don't have it all ironed out smoothly. I think it's new for us and it's new for you. But the new four-year plan would have us bringing projects in as we are the Justice Building and saying, here's the project we need to plan. We've actually done some planning on the Justice Building. Or we need to do preliminary design and then come back in 2 years and have you look at it again rather than just give us a dollar and let us build a $40 million building ultimately with no more review than an e-board hearing. That process shifts under the legislation that was enacted last session. But we haven't all worked out exactly how that ought to operate. An example is that it has been customary under the old system that capital projects are heard in the last days of the legislature. When you're all under a lot of pressure and trying to grasp all these things quickly and move on, last session there was a committee or subcommittee dedicated to this purpose that heard it throughout the session. That probably is a good touch to the four-year plan. We'd like to work with LFO and the legislature and find a way to make that work smoothly. We don't think we should be on just recommending or requesting a dollar in as many cases as we have in the past. But we ought to say we're going to need $25,000 to plan this project, or $50,000 or whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the argument about the general fund, but I think it's a pay me now or pay me later equation. General fund can be either used for capital construction on a cash basis, or if they're used, if construction paid for with certificates of participation or other financing methods, we still have the rent accessible to the administrative agencies, and those are capital, those funds are coming from general fund. So it's either general fund capital construction allocations or general fund a certificate of participation repayment or general fund bonding obligation payments or general fund rent. So I'm not sure the distinction is very important in terms of eliminating the general fund question by simply using the mechanism of certificates of participation. We still have a general fund obligation, and whether it's a lump sum or spread over time, it still comes from the general fund.
Mr. Chair, I quite agree with Senator Farioli. The difference is the percentage. If you pay for this out of the general fund, you've just made 100% of that building a general fund burden. If you pay for it through a uniform rent that assesses it to the tenants, then in many cases the full amount or part of it, up to 60% on the average across the state, will be paid for out of federal funds and other funds, and you lose that if you just use the general fund. Otherwise, I totally agree. If it was a matter of an agency, if we were building a state police-owned building, for example, well, even that doesn't work. Trying to think of a building that is totally, or an agency that's totally general fund. Corrections, perhaps. I'm out of my depth there. That may not be the case there either. But if it is general fund totally, then cash makes sense if you've got it. Otherwise, we're looking at how do we assess these other funds that are flowing through the state's hands and be able to capture them too.
Mr. Chairman, I think the key issue there is that the bonding authority is limited. Certificates of participation are not. So COPs may be a viable option for deferred financing, but they exist outside the constitutional limitations for debt. So we grow debt using certificates of participation faster and without limitation. And in the case of capital construction, apparently without legislative oversight, other than one or two presentations before the legislative e-board. So I think there are other elements to look at besides just the equation of whether or not we're having a general fund expenditure.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't argue that. I think that the certificates of participation have been argued in many sessions before the legislature in many different committees, and we just defer to the legislative decision on that. However, you decide to handle the state's debt to us is a separate issue from how a particular building is financed here. Really, the CLPs are used very broadly for a wide variety of things. And years before that, it was revenue bonds that filled that same niche, and the same issues were argued, and we sure don't have a position to take in that. We would suggest that overall the state's debt load is prudent, and that the letter suggests just looking at CLPs, and we think that the legislature actually does look at the total debt load. If you just look at how much you owe on real estate, it will look high. If you look at your total debt, your total revenues, and your total assets, that's the way to analyze it. The bond rating agencies seem to think well of the state, perhaps not as well as it did back when our rating was AAA, but again, that's not my area. Essentially, the letter ends by suggesting that you not approve us to use money for planning, $2 million there. And we think that on its face is counterproductive, that we must do that. It is true that we may spend some money on planning, and you may then decide not to do a project. And that's a reasonable risk, as opposed to going full steam into the project and then finding we didn't plan it well. So we think the planning on its face is rational. Also note that planning is spread throughout the bill across the state. It isn't just the buildings here on the mall that are involved in the planning process. That's the gist of my remarks, Matt.
Further identify the cost comparison between private ownership and the state owning the building. We had some discussion about that, and I believe the state is considerably less than private ownership. Could you clarify why that is?
Mr. Chair, there are a lot of issues that apply to that and a lot of ways to approach it, and people all like to use their own financial analyses. We will two or three times a year have an agency come to us and say, I would like to build a building and I want to do it through a lease purchase, or I want to lease a building and then they will give it to me, which is probably a lease purchase. In all of those cases, we look at it and say, what's the rate at which the owner is going to have to borrow money to build that building for you to be in it? And the answer is commercial rate. What's the rate at which the state will borrow? And the answer is probably in the 5% range, tax-exempt rates. That alone is sometimes a 4% cost factor on the total right there. So the state and government has a really good mechanism when it needs to borrow for construction, knowing that we're always going to pay for that money. If you use cash, then you've lost the opportunity to invest that money. If you use someone else's debt and you're paying rent, then you're paying for their debt. If you borrow it yourself, then you're paying for that debt. So that's a major one. We might be in the 5% range. They might be in the 7, 8, 9% range. It will vary.
The logic gets to be Byzantine here. When we pay it to a private enterprise, they're also paying personal property tax or personal income tax, corporate income tax, local jurisdiction property taxes, and a host of other income-generating mechanisms that we have craftily devised to deprive the honest, hardworking citizens of their hard-earned money. So there are arguments to be made for private sector support in government spending as well.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't disagree, and in fact, again, I would point out that we, on the whole, lease more than we buy or own, and we think that's a prudent practice. We've looked across the nation. There are surveys that have been done. Some states are virtually all ownership in the 75 or 80% range. Others are virtually the opposite of that. We own about 2.4 million square feet, and we lease about 3.4 million square feet across the state. Here, where we have our headquarters, obviously we own more than we rent. Now, that's another factor that makes a difference. And I I've done a lot of financial analysis over the years because I was in finance for a lot of my working life. But this one I move to just almost the common sense level and say, is there any of us that owning a, that knowing we're going to live in a home for the rest of our lives, and for that matter, our children will live in the same home thereafter, would rent it? We would buy it. And we would buy it because we do know that over the long run, that's the more economical way to go. So we can use a lot of complicated financial analyses. And frankly, I'm not arguing they shouldn't be done in order to establish policy, but I think the policy would bring us very much back to where we are, which is that we should largely lease, except for our headquarters operations, and where we have a site that we know we're going to be there perpetually. When it comes to an office across the state, almost in most cases, we know that we're just like a retail establishment. Our clientele may move, our needs may move, we may decide not to be there any longer. And that's a risk, of course, that private landlords take. And it goes into their profit structure and so on, is the risk that they will own in a place where people won't want to be. By and large, though, they'll just change to another clientele that will want to be there. And so we think it's very prudent for us to lease very widely, but not in a headquarters situation where those buildings will be in use by the state of Oregon for as long as any of us can foresee.
I'm not going to argue with conclusions. Maybe I should have had a nap after lunch. I'm a little cranky today, I guess. But see,
Senator Coriolli, you've had a very relaxing morning, so I just can't understand what you're trying to say.
I'm swinging the other way, Mr. Chairman. Anyway, the example, I don't think you can use it as a valid example, but the decision that a homeowner makes to purchase a depreciable home, because we use tax incentives to make that home purchase more financially advisable than rent. You get the write-offs, you get the basis for your capital gains tax calculations, you get depreciable benefits, there's an interest credit. I mean, this, it's an apples and orange kind of an example, but I'm not going to argue the point that it's in most cases for permanent housing of a state agency in a capital city that ownership might be better than lease. Just, if we're going to make these comparisons, I think we ought to also look at the market. And the market has options and availabilities of square footage at relatively favorable rates. And the idea that we seem to be looking at government on a curve that only grows, not one that expands and contracts relative to the market conditions and the economic conditions of the state. It might be more advisable to lease simply because there may be a time in state government when we don't need to have as much square footage as we do currently. And flexibility has a value. Opportunity cost has a value. And I'm not sure we're considering the opportunity cost and flexibility in the equation.
Thank you, Senator. Is there anyone else on the committee that has any questions regarding issues of planning or authorization for construction? Senator Krupp?
Thank you. In regard to the debt, COP debt in the state, do you know how much COP debt that the state is currently carrying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, no, I don't. And it's not a it's not just an issue for us. It really involves bonded debt, all of the debt. And I think that might be an issue for the next hearing.
Okay, then I'll ask that question then. Okay. And in regards to the Justice Building, in looking at your detail here of the intention to plan and the planning amount of $1.5 million, it says that you intend to hire an architect to prepare a preliminary design and detailed cost estimate and begin producing bid documents, and that's what you had mentioned the other day when I asked you that question. I'm curious to know how much additional will it cost to complete design of the building. If you're doing preliminary work now, what will completion of design cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I think I misled you too the other day, unintentionally certainly, but nevertheless. Our architect estimates about half, that is about half of it, it would be another $1.5 million. And we do provide in this material that you have before you, if you look at page, I think it is, 6, so let me find it. Page 5, top of the page, a breakdown of kind of typical professional fees. And before I go through that, I might also say that I said we're a little confused by this transition to the four-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
And we will readily admit that, because what we would typically, what we think we ought to do next session, having gone through this kind of a halfway session here where we're in the transition between the plans, is to say that when we are just at the raw planning stage, and that would be like the parking structure, we probably should just say, give us a dollar and go to the e-board with more detail perhaps. If we already have all the detail we're going to have for the e-board, we think we ought to give you the number that we think best. And in this case, that is the amount that we stated there. But the Justice Building is very different. It's had some study done on it. We did a study in 97. I don't know what that cost, but it's that thick. It lays out a lot of detail and preliminary work for us on it. Then we move to these kinds of numbers, which are typical, the ones that are on page 5, and it does lead us to that estimate of about $3 million. What our architect did in coming up with each of the numbers in each of the cases is just use his best analysis based on all of our experience there and on projects that we have going on and so forth. Then what we gave you was kind of apples, oranges, bananas, cherries. Some of them are just planning. Some of them are planning and design. Some of them are planning, design, and bid documents. And we didn't do that in order to deceive. We did that because we were just providing what do we think is the appropriate stage for us to move to between now and the next biennium. So it is there. Now, we actually believe with the Justice Building that it could just as easily be that we should move a little more slowly than that and have some of that come back later. But the fact is, what we have always done, whether the e-board approved an amount or the legislature did, is it's always there in the capital construction fund. We just don't spend it if we don't need it, because we'll need it the next day on the next project. So it is really, we've done this time a little bit of the past. And the past has been that we ask for a figure, and if that figure is too high, it doesn't matter because we don't spend it. And if it's too low, it doesn't matter because we go to the e-board. We want to find the better path for you so that we're able to give you a clear figure there, and I don't think I did.
No, and it was most disturbing to me as an individual who's been hired by the people to look after their tax dollars. And I guess this is one of the problems I have with term limits, which I believe in, but is a double-edged sword, because individuals like myself who may have business background come into this process and we're not given, because legislators have never been given, the complete tools that I would like to be given to make decisions when I'm voting on huge budgets here in regards to how that money is being spent. Now, I don't ever see any figures here about how anyone, any state agency, period, has spent their money previously. I don't see any of that. All I see is what the previous budget was, what the new current service level is, and try to make a decision based upon that. And I must say that I really feel that I need, I think, much more detailed information to make these decisions. That's just a general policy statement I've made. Now, in regards to Justice Building, $3 million for design work seems to be in line. It's about 10% of what you're projecting the cost of the building to be. What is your procedure in terms of going out to, are you going to go to bid for an architect? An architect's going to,
no.
You're going to take the lowest, best offer how to design this, or no? What's your procedure with that?
Mr. Chair, there is a very large amount of law and administrative rules dealing with the purchasing of services. We don't get to decide how we want to do that. We have to follow the law. And the law for the purchase of architectural and engineering services is very precise. I could ask our state architect to come up and describe it. It is not a bid. It is not a low. In fact, we're forbidden to just say low bid wins. And so if you'd like, I can bring him up. It is a it is a complicated area, and we actually, what our project manager's staff does, and there are about eight of them, in large part, is try to manage projects in such a way that they conform to the complex purchasing laws of the state. I'm not complaining about those laws. I understand the reason for them. We want to make sure that how we buy conforms with the policies of the state in its programs. And I think they do that. But in that area, no, it is not just a low bid. It is competitive, but it's competitive on bases laid out in the statute. The construction itself would be, and the frustration that you feel, I do understand. The Justice Building is a good example, though. This is one of the first ones where you would actually look at twice. In the past, you might have authorized us $1 or $1 million. It virtually wouldn't matter at this point. And then the emergency board later would make the decision to go ahead. It would never be seen by the legislature again other than the emergency board. So it is a new process now. But in that new process, we can't bring you the detail before we get the detail. So at one time, we would have come in and said, well, we don't know yet. Give us $1. We'll go to the e-board. And you'd have never seen it. Now we'll be coming back with that detail.
Okay. Two quick questions, Mr. Chair.
And if you don't mind, Representative, I would prefer to have you meet with the architect rather than take time today. I think it's a good, unless someone else in the committee would like to hear that presentation. But.
Okay, no, I'm not necessary to hear that today. $250,000 for project management, and this is to manage the process of preliminary design work, detailed cost estimate, and preparing bids.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, no, it would go beyond that, and that's why I said we have apples, oranges, cherries, and bananas here. We're really looking at the contract that would be letting and would go well beyond that. For us, a project doesn't come in the same bites that the legislature does. That is to say, we started this project in the past. We consider it still to be an ongoing project, and it will be, you know, through those sections. So we really do kind of look beyond it. I think in this case, we just didn't lay that out as clearly as we might have for you. Because
I would say that's an awful lot of money for, in my view, for someone. I mean, how many people does it take to oversee preliminary design? And I mean, you know, obviously probably a couple of people, but not full-time for a year or 2 years, it would, in my mind.
I absolutely. No, Representative Krupp, this moves right on into construction.
Okay.
And one last question. It was not needed.
Thank you. Construction cost is estimated at $125 a square foot. How does that compare with private enterprise construction cost of a very similar type of building?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, it would be the same for private enterprise on a very similar type building. Here on the mall, we build buildings knowing that they will be perpetually occupied. And so if I was putting up an office building in an area where, as a business, I expected to be there for a decade or so and then leave, I would be building one kind of building. But if I know it's going to be owned by the same owner and going to be occupied by that owner 150 years from now, I build another kind. It isn't marble, I think it was referred to. I think there are only a couple of marble buildings, this one and one at the other end of the mall. But it is instead that the buildings are built to last. And we do. We've gone through and refurbished buildings that at the time they were built were said to have a 40-year life. And they are now way beyond that and will be 50 or 100 years from now.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair. Any other questions?
Not questions, but a statement based on some of the questions the good representatives from Halton staff. When we look at the bills that are before us now, or today, in light of term limits, we're going to be dealing with some very complicated issues, the legislative budget, this budget, the emergency board. Probably a better tack to be making in the future would be to bring this type of legislation forward much earlier in the session, because these are complicated issues, especially for people, for those of us that are in our first terms. To try and deal with in the time frame that's still available is condensing it too quickly. And I think that may be a note for next session, is that we can smooth some issues out a lot better if we have a little more time to deal with them.
Any other questions?
I think Representative Hansen brings up an important concept and also Representative Grupp. The idea is that we initiate these projects conceptually, and then we go to the planning stage to see if some opportunities exist and some perceived problems can be resolved. And then that creates a planning appropriation, which moves almost under its own power from the planning process to the e-board. And that becomes a reality over time. And I'm wondering at what point our freshman legislators who will be entering the system and increasing frequency of term limits operate, if they're ever advised that the authorization should proceed with capital construction was neither expressed nor implied by the authorization to study the issue and do planning. And I doubt that ever happened.
I've never known about that until this issue was arisen.
So I guess for me, it means that the legislative e-board, which is not constituted as a capital construction board, is operating in that manner, and whether or not it ought to not have the function of being in charge of the capital approvals for construction. Perhaps that ought to be a permanent standing committee and not done through the e-board.
Mr. Chair, we would love to work with you through the interim with LFO and try to find a way to fix that, because we don't disagree at all. We're no more comfortable with that kind of process, I think, than you are. I would suggest just one thing that might give you some comfort. If you glance at the map, you'll notice that it's a 1986 plan for the mall. Here on the mall, although the building shapes change, it's really following the plan. So long-range planning has been pretty good. It's this approval process on the individual projects that is happened so fast sometimes you're not sure it did. I believe there have been cases where there was virtually a 15-minute gavel hearing on the bill like this, and it was moved.
Okay, we have two other issues I'd like to just run by the committee, and those are in budget bills. I think you all have a copy of the Fort Haven Beach budget bill. We've seen that before. Simply want to ask if there's any comments or discussion on that.
I just ask everybody, if somebody needs a copy, I can.
And if not, the second issue is that Senator Hannon has also brought to my attention, I believe the staff, interest in another budget bill. And Joe Jane, would you like to realize it's not printed yet, but I didn't want the committee to be able to think about it before tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I understand the situation to be is this. PGE, Portland General Electric, expects to or has applied for some federal funds for the decommissioning of the Trojan nuclear plant. PGE is interested in developing a working relationship with the Parks Department to ultimately, if it gets the federal funds, turn that land over to the state for a state park. What would be entailed if this to accomplish this, as far as the capital construction budget is concerned, would be to add a $1 limitation, other funds limitation, for parks to acquire and develop the Trojan nuclear plant property as a state park if and when it is given to the state. In addition to that, it would require a budget note that would describe the potential working arrangement or relationship that parks would work with Portland General Electric to accomplish all of this.
And wouldn't it be true, Georgina, what we need for this action, though, is simply a budget note to study, asking the Parks Department to study that issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding in conversations with Mike Stinson, our legislative fiscal officer, is that because there is nothing in the bill currently, Senate Bill 5527, currently for parks and recreation, that we would need a $1 limitation to make the budget note relevant to the bill.
Okay. Other questions, comments? I thought we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5527, and I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 5523. And I appreciate your watching the door to keep the ferry away from sneaking out. Can our song, if you could watch that door for us, appreciate that too.
Or the door.
You got a rope.
I got one door.
Yeah, but you gotta get some here, so.
Sure, call them.
Well, no, we'd be here all night if we were there. Right?
And while we're waiting for the material to be distributed, I wondered what the name of the park that would be created from the Trojan Nuclear Facility would be called. Perhaps it could be a land or
land of giants.
Land.
20-foot worms.
I think Representative Hanson had a great line. It's kind of like the park that glows. The park that glows. It's a lot of money on lighting.
Yeah.
Are we ready to go to work on
it? Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, Peggy Archer, Deputy Legislative Fiscal Officer, I apologize on behalf of Mike Simpson that he's otherwise occupied right now, and so I'm going to have to sit here and help you through the work session on these budgets, which I'm not all that familiar with in recent years, anyway. You can see my analysis.
That's code for you're stuck with putting up with us.
Okay. Or I was thinking of it the opposite direction. Mike has indicated that you went through the details of the budgets yesterday, and so what you have before you are the spreadsheets that show the material that he presented yesterday. The top sheet is a summary sheet on the legislative branch. It shows the revised budget at the bottom. That figure across the bottom with the percentage increases over the current service level and over the 97-99 budget period. The spreadsheets that accompany that, there's one for the Legislative Assembly, one for the Legislative Administration Committee, Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal, Legislative Revenue, and the Commission on Indian Services. The last page shows you the changes in position reclassifications that took place over the course of the interim. And Mike apparently has discussed those with you and wanted to show the list of those on that page. And it's my understanding that you've had the discussion on the budget and the BBC.
I believe we have. And the only issue that really arose yesterday was changing the staff of judicial committees. That's the whole.
Is there any possibility of doing that, Mr. Chair? I'd like to suggest that we do that. Talking to Nathan Shetterly, who feels strongly about it, who is chair of the Judiciary Committee, part of it anyway, on the House side. But, speaking with Senator Brown, who was on the Judiciary Committee on the Senate side, they both would like to maintain the status quo, basically, which is to keep the Judiciary Committee under the purview of Legislative Council. They believe that makes more sense. They don't see any reason to change, and they would like to keep it there. So if a motion is in order, I would move that, but I want to know how you want to do it.
My conversation with leadership is that it is their request to move it back to the legislative policy staff, and that was my intention to move it forward on that basis. And if maybe Mr. Henderson would like to come forward, and we discussed it yesterday, quite extensively, I thought, but my understanding is it's primarily from a management position to have all of the legislative committee staff in one jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Dave Henderson, Legislative Administrator. That was the basis of the discussions that we had, that the work of the Judiciary Committee staff was more similar to the work of other committee staff than to the work of the drafters in Legislative Council. And that was the reason for the suggestion initially to move it back.
Chair, there obviously was some suggestion to have made the move just a year ago or 2 years ago, whenever it was. I think it was a process longer than one by one to make the change. And, committee members are satisfied with the change, but not like to see the new change. So I, again, reiterate that point. My guess is you've got the votes if you need them to go the other way. But so I like the idea of satisfying the members on the committee. They know better than anybody else what makes sense for them. Representative Shetterly was here to tell us yesterday.
Senator Shaw, I raised that issue with the speaker, and she said she was aware of that, and she would discuss that further with the other members. There's no other discussion. Chair, what is your motion?
So made.
We don't have any amendments, so this is a straightforward motion on...
Are we voting on the entirety of the whole legislative branch? Is that it in one motion? Okay, because I have, would have some objections. Part of it's all vote, not on the whole thing.
Might wait a moment till
Ted's closer. Ted's closer. Yeah, I think they've got to talk to you. Oh, there.
Oh, there
you left the door.
I've got some concerns too about the budget. I'll go forward to move now to move it forward to expedite the process. My concerns are, one, the timing. I think this is, again, one of these, the types of budgets that should be coming forward earlier in the session, so we've got a chance to examine it closer. Much of what's in here I think is a good basis for. We're spending a lot of money on computers, information equipment, that I don't think we've really examined as a committee with the type of detail that we have with some of the other agencies. And I think it's an issue that when we're talking about, in effect, our own budget, we should be held to at least the same standards as we've held every other agency for the state. And I think it adds to our credibility if we closely examine our own budget. And this one we haven't closely examined. There's certainly a lot of very good issues, very good things in it. The improvements for the capital itself, I concur completely with. The pay raises, the adjustments for the legislative staff salaries, I think is very, very well thought out and very necessary. Probably the only specific thing that I would criticize is the extra caucus position. And I think those could have went under a great deal more scrutiny, both at the e-board, and then if the e-board is making that decision, then we should have spent significantly more time in terms of examining those. In light of those things, I will vote yes to move it forward and then reserve the right to beat it up on the floor a little bit.
Any other comments?
Sure. I think I would have voted, if we were doing these divisions of the legislative branch separately, voted for all of them except the legislative assembly division, which I think shows the greatest percent of just the 19.1% increase in the budget. It seems to me that what we're doing in terms of adding staff into your legislative assembly and spending far more than we should be spending there. I don't know how many millions of dollars more that is, but that's rather substantially more than current service level at a time when we need to be spending money on education and other things that are, I think, are more important than this. So that explains my no. The other parts of the budget, the staffing for legislative council, for legislative fiscal, for legislative revenue, and the increase in salaries, those are justifiable, and I would have voted yes for those.
Chair,
I would like to agree with my good colleague Mitch Meteor and the great Hawaiian print flower shirt, which I'm extraordinarily envious of. Seems to get away with wearing that stuff, whereas my wife would never let me do that.
stuff. But she does let you wear the other stuff you wear.
She doesn't know about the other stuff.
Oh,
there's another corner of the shop. Okay.
It's not fair.
I think I get to make at least one comment back in defense of my wife. She oftentimes she's prepared cards and pins that say he dressed himself this morning. I'd like that to be known. No credit for it.
Very well taken. Mr. Chair, I'm a little uncomfortable voting for the budget for the same reasons that two of the gentlemen have expressed. I'll go ahead and vote yes for it. Probably won't choose to beat up on her on the floor, but I too am just very disturbed at how we're doing this process now. I know it's how it's been done for many years because legislators spent many years in this building and learned a lot more about budgets. We will not have that opportunity because of term limits. And I'm convinced that we need to either split our sessions and concentrate one amount of time with everyone divided up, learning about the budget and going through budgets with fine-tooth comb, because I am very uncomfortable with this process in terms of voting for not only this budget, but many of the budgets that we have even spent time with still don't have what I consider to be an accurate picture of making a good, qualified decision about that. And I hope that in the future we take the steps to change this process to give legislators like myself the proper tools to make what I consider to be a better decision, or better decisions. So, let's get it done.
Okay, sure. Well, I do support this overall, particularly because of the issues in terms of the professional staff here in the legislature's salaries, and I'm thinking especially at legislative council and the truly abysmal salary we have paid the attorneys that work there. I learned early on this session what their salaries were, and I was just shocked, particularly the ones they hire for the interim, for the session. I think that for a long time the legislature has treated its own budget worse than it has others for many, many sessions, and so I'm actually appreciative that we have recognized the people that work for us and begin to treat them as, ironically, other agencies treat their staff, or at least we're attempting to. And so I like that part of this. It's a weakness, been a weakness in the Legislative Assembly budget, I think, for decades, and this is something that I very much appreciate.
Those are separate budgets in the furniture.
It's
not as complex.
Yeah. I just want to concur with Senator Kraft and Hanson that we need more time to work these budgets, and I guess I'd like to blame that on the chair since he's not here. but really, as thorough as we've seen Chair Butler this whole session, I think that I'm sure he would like to spend much more time on it too. I think he's really keen to the fiscal process.
Chair, so. Sure, that's a question. Didn't we ask this branch to do the 4% efficiency?
No, that's that.
It's my understanding that they were not asked.
Every other budget was expected to do the 4% efficiency, but this one?
I believe so.
Very well.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for recognizing me. I sometimes find the attendance in this community truly surreal, and this is one of those experiences that
you almost feel like you're not here, don't you?
Very often. And when I am, it's deja vu all over again. But I want to tell you something. You know, this the attendance of this community has saved me a lot of money, because I it was an argument between coming to the committee semi-regularly or joining an encounter group, and I found I support this budget. I think it's an excellent budget. I understand and respectfully disagree with Senator Tro on the
you always
but respectfully. We do have a citizen legislature, and one of the ways we continue to do that is by increasing the professional capability of the staff. and that does include the caucus staff, and it's important to note that we're doing that for all the caucus staff. We all fight the battle of having to hire and find and train and retain high-quality legislative staff, and it's particularly difficult when we have legislators from all across the state that need to maintain that staff. It's very difficult to find people in the interim that will work for the kind of dollars that we have available. So I was pleased to see those enhancements. Yesterday, I was unable to offer support testimony for the Bureau of Indian Services, which I think is a Commission on Indian Services, which is an excellent legislative branch agency, and I'm proud to see that it's in this budget and being supported in this budget, and I'll vote yes for this budget. Thank you,
Senator. Representative Krepp, to confirm your motion to approve Senate Bill 5523 to the full Ways and Means of the DPAS recommendation.
Yes, sir.
You've all heard that motion. You have the clerk call you.
Senator Farriola. Senator Lynn.
Aye.
Senator Sproul.
No.
Representative Cook.
Yes.
Representative Hanson.
Yes.
Representative Leonard.
Yes.
Chair.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Mr. Carey, we'll ask Chair Butler, since he's not here, to carry it to the floor and to the House, and who would like to volunteer?
I'll carry it for
Next, we would open the work session on Senate Bill 5582. Thank you, Peggy. Would you like to open this?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 5502 again is the bond limitation, and the other day I passed around some adjustments that we would be recommending to the bill as drafted with new known information, and there were a couple of items that were yet to be resolved, and one of them is the lottery revenue bond. That issue still hasn't been resolved. I think the education subcommittee is still working on the exact amount for revenue bonds for schools, and then certificates of participation. We have a number, but again, that would be subject to issues with prison siting. We have heard nothing new or a change there, so we have no real new information to provide as far as some final numbers.
I just wanted to give the committee an opportunity. Leadership asked me to hold this off until tomorrow. We will again.
Are we meeting tomorrow, Sunday?
Tomorrow, 2:30. 2:30 prior to the full wage and means committee.
Okay.
And so I think we have that's the transportation agreement to the subcommittee is meeting 2 o'clock. So I have a conference.
Well, that's a decent solution around, folks. As long as we know where you're at, sir.
Okay. If there's no other questions, or comments that want to be made, we can close this.
Sure. Is the thought that we will know those numbers by tomorrow when we meet this one?
That is the expectation. Okay. On both this one and 6 5 4 7 2. With that, we'll close this session. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah.